case of this morning, United States v. John Beard. Mr. Ramelkamp.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jay Ramelkamp. I represent the defendant appellant, John Beard. This matter is on appeal from the defendant's resentencing hearing, which was held May 25, 2006. And the issue is whether the district court committed clear error in taking certain relevant conduct into account in determining the defendant's sentence. The relevant conduct at issue concerns drug transactions between the defendant and two individuals, Homer Harris and Marcus Harris, because we have a lot of Harrises in this case, including the government's attorney. I'll refer to them by first name. These transactions resulted in additional drug quantities being attributed to the defendant, which increased the defendant's offense level for sentencing purposes from a 28 to a 32. The only evidence supporting these relevant conduct findings was Homer's testimony. Homer testified at both of the defendant's trials. He gave statements to law enforcement, and he testified at the defendant's 2255 hearing as well. Homer admitted to engaging in drug transactions with Marcus for a period of years, and he claimed that Marcus bought his drugs from the defendant. Homer also claimed that he bought drugs from directly from the defendant for a limited period, approximately 5 weeks, between September 7, 1999, when Marcus was arrested, and October 12, 1999, when the defendant was arrested. This relevant conduct is described in paragraphs 22, 23, and 24 of the PSR, and I'll address those in order. In short, because the PSR is inaccurate, it's the government's burden to produce some evidence from which the district court could make a reliable finding, and I don't believe the government produced any such evidence.
Now, of course, the district court explicitly states in its order that it found Homer Harris was credible with respect to the amounts in those paragraphs you've just identified. And the judge further essentially makes the finding, as I read what she's done, that some of these discrepancies in dates, you know, was it a certain day or was it 2 days earlier, are really just attributable to normal human error in that. I mean, you've made quite a point about one date that's an impossible date because he's already in custody, but the judge finds that on the whole and by and large, the witnesses are testifying credibly, and she doesn't think that, I guess, the level of precision that you're looking at is being communicated.
There's a few points on that issue, Your Honor. First of all, if I remember correctly, the district court judge determined that Homer was more credible than Marcus, not that Homer was always telling the truth. She did determine that he was a credible witness. The other point is, especially with regard to this last piece of relevant conduct, where if we take the most conservative estimates of Homer's time frames, the transaction took place after the defendant was arrested. We're only a day off. Well, it's more than just that we're a day off in this one recounting of events. Homer gave a number of statements that resulted in being weeks, if not months, including the PSR paragraph 22, up to a year off in his time frames. The point isn't just that Homer missed it by a day. Homer had no idea what he was talking about when it came to time frames. In the paragraph 22 of the PSR attributes 1 kilogram of cocaine to the defendant, and this finding was based on Homer's testimony that he observed the defendant sell a kilo to Marcus at Homer's apartment on Allen Street in Springfield, Illinois, in the spring of 97. At the trial, Homer testified that this was the spring of 98, and there's another important point. The government says that Homer's corroborated this story by saying he remembers it specifically as the first transaction he observed between the defendant and Marcus. But in the same trial, Homer said that the first time he observed the defendant sell drugs to Marcus was late 97. So we have three dates. So Homer basically gets to take his pick, and the district court just gets to say he was wrong about his dates. We'll assume all this vast discrepancy aside and assume he's telling the truth.
Well, what if he, what if though, I mean, as I understood her finding, it was precisely that, that he did see the sale of the kilo and the precise date as among the ones that you're talking about wasn't really all that important as long as he did witness the sale of the kilo.
The primary point is, as it's described in the PSR, which is what the district court adopted, these transactions couldn't have happened. There was evidence introduced at the resentencing hearing that Homer didn't begin living in this apartment on Allen Street until after the spring of 98. So we can take our pick of Homer's dates. He wasn't in that apartment, so this couldn't have happened as Homer described it and as it's described in the PSR. The point is the district court adopted the PSR, and we believe that by adopting what is clearly erroneous, the court is basically adopted testimony that couldn't have happened.
Doesn't Homer say that he's not sure of the dates?
He's very candid that he doesn't remember dates, Your Honor. Again, the point is that we're not off a day or a week. We're not describing holiday seasons and it was before or after. He says spring of 97, he says late 97, and he says spring of 98, and with the benefit of hindsight, we can determine that none of these dates were probably correct at all, and yet we can just redline his testimony to make it fit. Moving on to paragraph 23, which regards a kilogram of cocaine the defendant allegedly hid in a trash can at a Burger King restaurant in Springfield, the only evidence that the defendant put the drugs in the trash can is, again, Homer's testimony, and Homer didn't see it. He claims Marcus told him about, that the defendant put the drugs there. While it's appropriate for the district court to consider hearsay evidence at sentencing, it should require some corroborating evidence to make sure it's reliable.
But there's no general corroboration rule for hearsay at sentencing. There's a general rule that the district judge has to decide that the information is sufficiently reliable, but some hearsay might not require corroboration. I'm not familiar with any case that has said all hearsay at sentencing must be corroborated.
That's correct, Your Honor. There are admonishments from this court, however, where hearsay evidence significantly increases the amount of drugs for which a defendant's being held accountable, we should look for corroborating evidence. Here, this one piece increases the amount, I believe, by over 20%. And some corroborating evidence, let's say, even if it isn't necessary, would be a good idea. And the only evidence we have is hearsay evidence, which by its nature is unreliable. And the only corroborating evidence we have is that Homer's own testimony, which is in a sense self-serving, that basically because Marcus bought drugs from the defendant in the past and Marcus told him that the defendant put the drugs in the trash can, it had to be the defendant. That's pretty thin, and I believe it's too thin to support a relevant conduct finding. Also should be noted that Homer identified over 30 people, including the defendant and Marcus, with whom he engaged in drug transactions in Springfield. So the idea that Homer, who can't remember one year from another, could remember exactly who put the drugs in this trash can is a little far-fetched. Moving on to paragraph 24, it attributes 765 grams of cocaine to the defendant. And this amount was determined by Homer's estimates of his direct buys from the defendant. Again, these buys occurred only in a five-week period between Marcus's arrest and the defendant's arrest. The first time was about 2 weeks after Marcus's arrest when he bought 9 ounces from the defendant in Chicago. The second was at a minimum a week after that, and that puts us outside of when these could have occurred. In closing, I'd ask that the court remand this for resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Harris?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Mr. Rammelkamp. My name is Gregory Harris, and I am from the Central District of Illinois. As the court has already pointed out, the issue here is whether or not there was sufficient indicia of reliability to support the district court's finding that the evidence supported the relevant conduct that is complained of by the defendant. And there certainly was sufficient evidence in this case to support that finding. The district court so found. The district court said the central issue in this case was the credibility of Mr. Homer Harris, because as counsel has pointed out, most of the relevant evidence came, if not all of it, came from Homer Harris's testimony and statements that he had made to law enforcement agents.
Just even if it's not fully required, to what extent was Homer's account corroborated by other evidence in the record?
Well, Your Honor, there was other evidence in the record that corroborated his testimony. Homer Harris testified that in the beginning he was introduced to the defendant by Marcus Harris, and that Marcus Harris was obtaining his sources of cocaine from the defendant. Later, Marcus Harris was arrested in September of 1999 and thereafter asked Mr. Homer Harris if he would take over distributing cocaine from the defendant. Mr. Homer Harris agreed to do that and said that he engaged in numerous transactions with the defendant, going to Chicago, purchasing cocaine, and the defendant coming to Springfield, delivering cocaine to Mr. Homer Harris.
But those transactions are not thrown into the hopper as relevant conduct?
There were records, telephone records, which would indicate that there were numerous conversations between the defendant and Homer Harris, which corroborates Mr. Homer Harris's statements that he was dealing with the defendant. The defendant, on October 12, 1999, was caught in a drug deal by law enforcement agents with 1 kilogram of cocaine in his car. Homer Harris testified that that kilogram of cocaine was earmarked for him, although he was only intended to purchase a half a kilogram of cocaine. There was sufficient evidence in the record to show that Homer Harris had enough cash to purchase that half kilogram of cocaine. And there's evidence in the record to show that that kilogram of cocaine, in addition to 16.4 grams of crack cocaine, was found in a concealed compartment within a automobile where the defendant was driving, as if this was not the first time that something like this had transpired. So there was other evidence in the record to support Homer Harris's statement. In addition, the district court found that Homer Harris had made a proffer approximately 1 year after the transaction occurred, and during this proffer, he precisely identified that he had observed a kilogram transaction between Marcus Harris and the defendant involving a kilogram of cocaine at his apartment.
Is this the one sort of out on the doorstep of the apartment?
This is the one that was in Homer Harris's apartment.
Inside the apartment. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor, where he testified erroneously that this occurred in 1997. But he also admitted he was incorrect about the dates. But I think the important fact to look at in terms of the district court's finding that Homer Harris was credible and that there was a reliable evidence supporting his testimony is that he never wavered about where the transaction occurred at his apartment or the amount of the cocaine that was involved or who was the supplier of the cocaine. It was always the defendant at his apartment involving 1 kilogram of cocaine. The same thing with the Burger King situation. Again, there was no reason for Homer Harris to misrepresent about that occasion, nor was there any reason for Marcus Harris to not be straight with Homer Harris when he told him about the drug transaction, because as you recall from the record, this was well before these defendants were arrested on drug charges. So Homer Harris admitted that Marcus Harris was a confidant, and the same thing in the sentencing hearing when Marcus Harris testified. He testified that Homer Harris was a childhood friend. So there was no reason for them not to be straight with each other at that time. In fact, Homer Harris had witnessed drug transactions between the Marcus Harris and the defendant at that time. So again, we feel that there was sufficient evidence in the record to support the district court's findings and that her findings were not clearly erroneous. We would ask that the sentence be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Does he have any time? You have a minute left if you have anything you'd like to add.
Thank you.
There is one argument the government raises in its brief that I'd like to address. I think it's concerning. There was a third revised PSR in which the defendant was held accountable for 6 kilos of cocaine, and this was based on one of Homer's stories that he bought half a kilo every other week from the defendant for 6 months. The government argues that the defendant was given a credit because of Homer's inability to remember dates when this erroneous, admittedly erroneous paragraph was stricken from the PSR. This is troubling. The government's arguing that the defendant was given a credit at sentencing, something he didn't deserve, when the government discovered a mistake and corrected the mistake. And I believe the idea that they would call this a credit, that we're doing a favor for the defendant, is very troubling. Again, in closing, I request that this cause be remanded for resentencing without the relevant conduct. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And you were appointed, were you not? Well, we thank your supervisor. We thank you on behalf of the court for your assistance both to your client and to the court. And thank you also to the government, as always.